Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. Another little special edition of the podcast today because we had so much to talk about on Thursday that we essentially forgot to talk about the upcoming Arsenal game that Everton have on Monday evening. I'm your host, Adam Jones, today joined by a dream team of Dave Prentice and Gav Buckland. Look at this. I'm trying to be humble and say they're not a dream team. Rafa Benitez, as we're recording on Friday, has just had his pre-Arsenal press conference. So we'll go over Everton's team news, what Rafa Benitez has said about Wednesday night's game as well, ahead of Monday night's fixture against Arsenal. And we'll get the lads' predictions for what will be Everton's next match a bit later on in the podcast. But Preno, we'll come to you first. We've just listened to Rafa Benitez, as I said. We'll start with the team news. He mentioned that Yerry Mina's back in training, and but he didn't really elaborate much into that. Andre Gomez is back in training, but it's still disappointing to see Dominic Calvert-Lewin is still a couple of weeks away, he said, didn't he, from full fitness.
Yeah, I mean, he was trying desperately to accentuate the positives. I mean, he even threw in there that, you know, so Yerry Mina returned to training. We'll see how he is in the next couple of days and whether he can be involved. And I would have thought that after having been so long out, there's absolutely no way he can be involved. I mean, that would be absolute desperation to throw him straight back in again. Good to hear that Andre Gomez is back in training as well. He's been an under-the-radar miss over the last few weeks, because he has performed well on the occasions that we've seen him this season, in little flashes and little cameos. You know, so a return maybe to the Andre Gomez that, you know, we were seeing pre that appalling injury. There were good moments of team news. Obviously, Dominic Calvert-Lewin's continuing absence, and the fact it's going to be a couple more weeks still is the big negative. But I think overall, Rafa spoke very well, and you can tell he's desperately trying to calm things down a little and just try and say, look, you know, so this isn't a crisis. This is a very disappointing run, you know, largely exacerbated by the problems that we've got in the injury front. But let's just settle down, eradicate the mistakes, and, you know, so and the results will come. And it was quite heartening to hear that. I mean, whether that message, well, I hope the message is going to be embraced by the players, whether it'll be embraced by the support base at large, I doubt. But, you know, it was a valiant attempt, I thought, to try and paint a positive as possible picture as you can on a team that's just been battered 4-1 by your rivals and there's a run of no wins in the last 8 games.
I mean, Gav, Preno's mentioned there, you know, Rafa was speaking about, you know, the scenes after Wednesday night, and I thought it was quite interesting. I mean, I suppose it's no surprise, but it's quite interesting that Rafa Benitez was keen to not apportion blame onto any sort of individual. We all heard the sack the board chance that were coming throughout the game and then at the end of the match as well on Wednesday evening. But Rafa Benitez was very keen to say, look, I'm just focusing on the pitch. I'm not apportioning blame to anyone. We all need to stick together in this period. And as I say, I suppose it's not a surprise to hear them say that, but it's interesting nonetheless, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been around the block enough times, isn't it, not to say anything controversial there. I think it was, shall we lose together, did he say something like that? There's a couple of things caught me. Going back to the previous conversation with Dave, it's Calvert-Lewin's gone from being a couple of weeks to now a minimum of a couple of weeks, hasn't it? Which is not what he said a couple of weeks ago, because we thought that Calvert-Lewin was going to be in contention for the pre-Christmas games, if you recall, based on what Rafa had said 2 weeks ago. It's now looking like that.
Well, from what he'd said himself as well, didn't he? You know, I'm sure he gave some quotes saying he might be available for the derby.
Yeah. It's now looking like it's not going to be Christmas even, is it really, from that? Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing. The second thing, it was a strange statement he said. I thought, I've not seen physically his press conference, but I've read your review of it, Ad, and he said the club have changed their manager several times, but not changed their situation, which I thought was I don't know what that means. I don't know what he's trying to say there, you know. To be fair, I thought that was a bit of a strange one, but yeah, he's been mad. What you expect them to handle that type of stuff with aplomb and whatever that he did. Thought it was quite an interesting, you know, as you would expect, an interesting number of things that were said. But yeah, I think he's right about the, you know, got to see the bigger picture, and it's why the responsibility of everybody is what you expect. And I don't think he's right to start picking, which has been known to, you know, pick fights with people he doesn't need to.
Well, I mean, just sticking with you, Gav, as well, I mean, we talked about potential returning players in Yeni Mina and Andre Gomez with Preno just there. Would you be tempted to throw either of them into the starting lineup, or do you agree with Preno that, you know, it's far too soon to be throwing them straight in after so long on the sidelines each?
I think the amount of fixes that are coming up, Ad, I don't think the one thing you can avoid is throwing somebody in on Monday and then, like, they have a relapse. You mean his injury record is horrendous, isn't it, really? Gomez, is, apart from the obvious one, has also been not great on occasion. So the last thing you want to do is throw people in, even in the next week or whatever, and then they miss 6 or 7 games of the Christmas programme, New Year programme. So I think it'd be wise to keep them on the training pitch away from danger at this stage. And you know what? I think also as well, I'm not sure how much he'd improve the team if they were only half fit anyway.
Didn't we? You know, the first 20 minutes, half an hour at Brentford, he was way off the pace. So yeah, it's going to take, you know, so those two players a bit of time to come back. So yeah, pointless throw them straight back in and rushing them.
Yeah, I just think the risk, you don't want to run the risk of losing them for 6 or 7, 8 games over Christmas, to be honest with you. Yeah.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, coming to you, Pereno, I suppose while we're on the subject of Dominic Calvert-Lewin, we should address the reports that have come out in some of the national newspapers this morning. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, quite fittingly, considering who we're playing on Monday, has been linked with a big money move to Arsenal, hasn't he? I mean, you know, I've seen a few people make reference to Rafa Benitez's transfer comments from a couple of weeks ago. He mentioned transfers again in this press conference, didn't he, saying if we don't need to sell players, then we won't sell players. And I think that's probably the important thing that Everton fans should really be focusing on here, isn't it? You know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin obviously is a very saleable asset in that sort of sense. He would make Everton a lot of money. But he's just so important to this side, isn't he? As evidenced by the team's form when he's been out of the side over the last few weeks.
Exactly right. I thought Rafa addressed that indirectly in today's press conference, because he wasn't asked about Dominic Calvert-Lewin specifically, but he did reference that we won't sell players because we don't need to, you know, so we want to try and keep hold of our best players, you know, so paraphrasing very roughly there. But, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is so important, you know, so as we've just addressed, but equally, he's still young, he's still developing, he's still progressing, and, you know, he's got the potential to be, you know, an absolute superstar for many years to come. He doesn't want to leave. He's happy, you know, so he likes the football club, you know, so he likes his teammates, you know, so he gets on great with the fan base. So there's absolutely no reason why, you know, so we should even be contemplating accepting offers from, you know, so clubs elsewhere. I mean, if we were thinking about, you know, so maybe, you know, so possibility of, you know, so players moving on in the near future, I think Richarlison is probably the one that you would be most, you know, concerned about, you know, losing. I wouldn't want to lose him because he's a very, very good footballer. But, you know, you get the impression that he's quite open to having, you know, so eyelids battered in his direction. You know, he's been a bit up and down, hasn't he, this season, discipline wise, you know, especially. So I think if there is going to be any kind of, you know, sort of offers that are maybe contemplated, I think possibly, and, you know, that's all I'm saying, possibly that Richarlison, you know, sort of might be the likelier of the players that we've got to be the subject of that rather than Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I mean, Arsenal can, you know, sort of offer as much as they like. And, you know, if the player himself doesn't want to come, leave, the club itself clearly don't want to sell. Well, that's the end of it, you know, so, and I hope that continues for the foreseeable future. It's weird sometimes. I mean, you look at transfer windows and you see how influential sometimes, you know, particular deals can be. And I'm thinking specifically about the shower across the park and, you know, the big stroke of luck that they got in the ridiculous sum of money that, you know, so Barcelona decided to offer them for Philippe Coutinho, you know, in a January transfer window. Absolutely absurd, you know, so as well as he had been playing. And that allowed them then, you know, sort of to invest the money really well in the best central defender in Europe, in Virgil van Dijk, and one of the best goalkeepers in Europe, in Alisson. You know, so two absolutely top-class players for, you know, a player that they could afford to replace anyway because they had other players similar to Coutinho in the squad. So, you know, for us to be in that position, you know, it would need somebody, you know, to make a ridiculous offer for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And let's face it, Arsenal aren't going to offer us, for argument's sake, 150 million quid for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So as far as I'm concerned, it's a non-starter. I don't think it'll happen. He says crossing his fingers and his toes.
I mean, Gav, Preno's called it a non-starter there, and I was agreed that, you know, in January we're not going to see any sort of Arsenal move for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. But in terms of you, how concerned would you be for it about a potential move in the summer?
It goes back to the Pickford conversation from a couple of weeks ago, isn't it? What Benitez has thought on it. I mean, it depends. It depends really how much he's got to spend elsewhere, really, hasn't it? I mean, I know that January's really going to be a non-starter for a number of reasons. In the summer, maybe a little bit more. Was it wiggle room is the phrase that was used? But it may be that for Benitez, might be that the only way he can make significant changes to the team is if he sells one of his, a pick with a Richarlison, a Calvert-Lewin, particularly the latter two. And if somebody did come up with silly money and Calvert-Lewin wanted to go, then Benitez may say, well, actually, to get the team I want, then I'm going to have to sell. I mean, there's a worrying thing here is slightly concerned in our midfield at the moment. I know the core is being injured, but how old's Alan? 31? Is he? The core,
yeah.
28? Something like that?
Yeah.
29? Not the youngest midfield in the Premier League, is it? You know? And so we think there's two or three positions Benitez probably needs to improve. And if that means selling one player for decent money and getting three players in, then that might be something that he may find attractive, to be honest with you. And so I don't think it's as cut as dried as perhaps he's saying, to be honest with you. And but again, it's depending on what's going on elsewhere, you know, in terms of, like, say, FFP and stuff and all this. Well, I wouldn't say it's cut and dry that he wouldn't want to sell at some point if Calvert-Lewin wanted to go, if it means he can rebuild elsewhere. That's what we're creaking, aren't we? Creaking into several parts of the pitch.
Well, I mean, we've mentioned the midfield there, Preno. Looking specifically at this Arsenal game, you know, on Wednesday, we were all bemoaning the fact that Everton didn't set up with three central midfielders. We all thought that it would have made a lot more sense to play in that manner. Do you think the same is the case for the game against Arsenal? Would you like to see three central midfielders in there, or do you think that it's a different match and it requires a different sort of system?
Yeah, it's a different match. I mean, no team is as ridiculously intense or, you know, relentless as Liverpool. Liverpool's three, maybe, with, you know, so the slight exception of Manchester City, you know, are close to them in that respect. But they are, like, just absolutely phenomenal in that area of the pitch, which is why it was, you know, we discussed it the other day, you know, a strange decision to go with two, especially having rested Fabian Delph at Brentford, which we all thought, you know, for that particular purpose, to come in and be fresh for the derby and then not to use him. So having seen how well Arsenal kept the ball last night on occasions at Old Trafford and, you know, sort of, you know, passed the ball very, very well. Personally, yeah, I think we probably would, you know, saw C3 and I thought Alan and Doucouré, you know, weren't as bad as your marks reflected on I thought, you know, it was a bad performance all around. I thought they were better than 3 out of 10, put it that way. But I think, you know, so with Fabian Delph, you know, in there as well, that can only help. I mean, Doucouré is certainly, you know, he's suffered for having, like, you know, a few weeks out. But I thought there were signs, you know, so he was getting back there again. He was driving forward on occasions. Alan had one of those nights, didn't he? But yeah, it's going to help if he has, like, somebody, you know, sort of alongside in Delph, somebody who's been performing particularly well over the last few weeks. So yeah, you know, if we're going to need, you know, sort of to disrupt Arsenal's possession, if we're going to get the ball and we're going to keep it and ensure that the running that we do is actually in possession of the ball, not chasing the ball, yeah, I probably would, you know, sort of use three in there. But, you know, that'll mean a change of system. Whether Rafa will go with that, who knows? We'll have to wait and see. My personal viewpoint, though, is yes. You know, so I think Fabian Delph, you know, sort of should be in there, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you agree, Gav, that Delph makes the most sense? I mean, I suppose Andre Gomez now becomes an option, but as we've already discussed, you know, with him coming back from injury, yeah, is it wise to throw him straight in? You know, yeah, Delph, Gbamon seem to be the two options, essentially, don't they? And we know one is preferred more than the other.
I was going to say, I don't think Gbamon's got a... then I've got more chance of getting this.
We forget about him totally now, don't we?
I just one thing. I was on the pod yesterday, but to be fair, it was a blessing in disguise. I get what Benitez was trying to do on Wednesday by playing four across the middle to block off their fullbacks. Yeah. I think people say, oh, we should have had three, but three in the park, which I also understand. But if you did that, that gives them space, so much space out wide for their two fullbacks to push into. And I just imagine Coleman against Robertson and Mane on his own, you know. So I don't think it's as easy as saying, oh, yeah, it would have been better if there was they in the middle. It would have just pushed the problem elsewhere, out wide. Sorry, that was just a point of trying to make. He's been criticised for it, Benitez, but I see what he was trying to do. It was a high risk, but it didn't pay off. As for Saturday, on Monday, I think Arsenal, they play for more four in the middle themselves these days. So you might just match up there and play four again. And it does make sense in that if you're playing that way, I think Delph's got to come back in, hasn't he? I think Alan could do with it a tactical rest. he looked shot, didn't he?
Just looking now, yeah, they played El Neni and Partey in the middle last night. Odegaard was like slightly further forward there, so you know, you could argue it was two in the middle.
So I'll just be, I'd be, you know, not too unhappy to see Delphin and Alan bench. To be fair, I think Doucouré probably needs the game time. Quite handy, isn't it? We've got 5 days for Doucouré between the two games. He's not playing on Saturday.
Yeah.
But Wednesday's match, so that can be.
Slightly more helpfully as well, is that we have the 24 hours less to prepare for the derby after Brentford. We've now got 24 hours longer to prepare for this game.
Yeah.
At Old Trafford last night, so swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, so basically what I'm saying is 4-4-1-1 maybe, just match maybe Arsenal up with... we haven't come to the site here, have we?
I was going to say, who's the one?
Doucouré and Delph add in the middle.
Mm. Well, I mean, we'll go straight on to that discussion then. Preno, obviously, you know, Salomon Rondon still being assessed, as Rafa Benitez said, but it seems extremely unlikely that he's going to be available for this weekend's game. So he drops out of the side. Who'd you play up front? Who comes in for Rondon? Do you bring in somebody like Sims to be a like-for-like replacement? Do you bring in Gordon to, you know, fill a gap on the wings and then put Gray in the middle? It's not exactly an ideal situation, really, is it?
It isn't. We have won games in the recent past with Gylfi Sigurdsson and Alex Iwobi as like false nines. But I'm not for a second suggesting that, you know, so it should be that. Cenk Tosun, for me, I mean, he's the closest we're going to get to a like-for-like replacement. Salomon Rondon looked much better on Wednesday. You know, it was more his type of game. He was physically much more imposing. He held the ball up well. again, never looked like getting a shot on target or a shot at goal, which is a concern for a striker. But generally, his performance was, you know, was better. Cheng Tosin, we don't know, do we? Because we just haven't seen him for so long. But, you know, prior to his long layoff, he was a centre forward that thrived on balls from out wide, which was obviously Rafa's modus operandi at the start of the season. Damari Gray, you know, so is back and available again and looks bright and capable of getting those balls in. Andros Townsend's been off the pace a little bit the last game or two. But, you know, when he's, you know, on form, he can do that as well. So Tosin is the kind of player that can thrive on that kind of service. It's whether he's fit and sharp enough to do that. And the reason I say that is he's got the experience of, you know, so Premier League football. He's scored goals in the Premier League. He's an international striker, let's face it. Ellis Sims is a young boy who's not played any senior football at all. And he's just come back after a very long layoff himself. You know, so he's got exactly the same problems that Tosin has in terms of match sharpness and stuff. What Ellis Sims will have in his favour is that element of unpredictability. You know, so Arsenal won't know a great deal about him. They won't know quite, you know, so what kind of player they're going to be facing there should he be selected. But it just worries me playing a young lad right from the start in a game like that. The time to, you know, bring him in is like, you know, so Rafa was doing with Lewis Dobbin, you know, so a few weeks ago, which bring him on for the last 10 or 15 minutes of matches and try and give him a taste of it that way. And fingers crossed, you know, so things are going well enough on Monday to be able to do that maybe. But I think it's too much of a risk playing him from the start, which is why I would say Cheng Tosin would be the more logical, you know, choice.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I suppose the argument would be, and I'll bring this to you, Gav, that Ellis Sims is the player who's just signed a new contract with the club. Cheng Tosin's the player who's only got 6 months left on his contract, yeah. And he's, you know, he's had multiple chances over the course of the last few years. I think the club have actively been trying to get rid of him essentially for the last couple of years, and he keeps getting long-term injuries, which means that he's still at the club at the minute. Why would you give Cheng Tosin another chance rather than give Ellis Sims a chance? You know, he does have this sense of unpredictability, and, you know, it's always a risk playing these young players, for example, but he's meant to be the future of Everton, isn't he? So why not use him now?
Because we're on an 8-game run without a victory, which is mounting on Benitez, and he's looking for results on Monday night. And the best way, probably think about getting a result.
But does Cheng Tosin guarantee a result?
Well, no. Exactly.
I mean, I suppose nobody guarantees a result. But
this is the sort of fallacy territory we get into, isn't it? Really, that, you know, we assume that that's going to, experienced players will turn up and young players will freeze, when you just don't know. I mean, we could do it. I mean, this comes up that often. We could just do with a standalone pod, couldn't we? On bringing young players in and the problems of it, you know, because it's just a repetitive, you know, theme, isn't it, over the last few weeks? But I and even Benitez has said that. What did he say a couple of weeks ago, that people think players, if they're young, I can't remember, it's not important whether they're young.
He said, like, young players doesn't mean they're good players.
Good
or
players,
something.
I suspect that the fact that he's left a couple on the bench for a few weeks now without playing, probably thinks they're not good enough to get in at this stage. I must admit, though, having said that, given some of the comments from supporters behind the press box on Wednesday night when Tosin was on the pitch, I think I'm not sure whether that will be a popular selection that will be met with paroxysms of joy at Goodison on Monday night, to be honest with you. But what Benitez does, isn't it, really? I mean, the only option is to play, again, not ideal, is Richarlison up top and play Gray behind him, or something like that, or a Wolves.
That's a possibility,
that's a possibility.
But we've spoken before, I don't like him as a centre forward. He's much more effective, you know, playing off a centre forward, I think. But, you know, sometimes needs must. So.
It's so typical, isn't it, really, of this season, that Rondon puts in a couple of improved performances at Brentford on Wednesday, and then injures himself or gets injured, you know. Just typical that, isn't it? But can't say youngsters are the reason, just said. Maybe not Tosin, maybe not Richarlison. You know, maybe Richarlison alternative. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Preno, we'll have to move on to Monday night, and, you know, we all saw the scenes at the full-time whistle on Wednesday. What are you expecting the atmosphere to be like on Monday?
I suppose it depends on how the match goes. I thought Phil did very well to get a positive statement of intent from Farhad Moshiri to indicate that he was going to attend the game on Monday, which has been a bit baffling for me this season. You know, I think he's been to one game at Goodison. And even then, you know, he arrived quite late. I think it was the Watford match. Obviously, he watches all the games, but, you know, you can't really gauge what's happening, you know, so amongst, you know, so the supporters and, you know, the mood of the football club, unless you're physically there. And he's been absent, you know, so all season. So he'll have been, you know, he'll have been told by people, but there's nothing like actually physically being there. And so, you know, he's effectively been, you know, using the other board members as a shield, you know, so to deflect him, because he's the owner. He makes the decisions. He makes, you know, so the big appointments. Rafael Benitez is Everton manager because he wanted him. You know, so I think he should be there. And, you know, I'm pleased to hear that he is, you know, so going to be present. What kind of reception he will receive depends entirely on how the match goes. You know, so if we start well, if we can get about Arsenal and get ahead of steam up and, you know, please, please take the lead. You know, so fingers crossed, you know, so things will be, well, I won't say cordial, but, you know, so relatively crisis-free or drama-free. But if Arsenal, you know, do what they did last night at Old Trafford and take the lead, you know, who knows? You know, it could be grim. And I've written about it today. You know, it concerns me, you know, that when you've got a fan base that are so disillusioned that, you know, so they are negative, you know, so all the time. And I get why they're negative, and I get, you know, so why, you know, they're waiting to be inspired by what they're seeing on the pitch, you know, before they, you know, so start getting behind the team. But it can be a very, very difficult situation, you know, so for the players out there. And I thought there was no lack of effort on Wednesday night. I thought, you know, so the players showed a good level of commitment. Okay, quality, you know, there's chalk and cheese compared to the quality Liverpool had, compared to the quality we had. But they're going to have to be strong again. Hopefully the fans will be behind them and get behind them, and we can be, you know, a unified force on their Monday night. Because let's face it, Arsenal have wilted in the past at Goodison in the face of, like, a unified force. We've got the, you know, the 0-0 draw under Duncan. There was that great rousing 2-1 win when we went a goal down. And the Koeman era 5 years ago, was it, when Ashley Williams scored that, you know, so that late goal we won there. Okay, it was in lockdown, wasn't it? You know, so last season. So, you know, so Arsenal's away record isn't great, and they have showed in the past a potential to be shrinking violets, if you like, you know, so in the force of a full Goodison, or a baying Goodison. And I hope we get that, because if the mood is negative and the mood is, you know, sort of confrontational against Everton, it's only Arsenal that will benefit.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on it, Gav? I mean, I think Preno's right in what he's saying, and I don't think there's any doubt that the Everton fans will support the players once they take to the pitch, because nobody wants to see Everton lose a match, of course. But, you know, there is just this impending sense for me that, you know, it's the mood in general wasn't exactly directed at the players, was it? On Wednesday night, it was directed at the wider, you know, the coaching staff, the board, the entire club, really. So how much of that is going to change from Wednesday night to Monday?
Not a lot. I'm more worried before the game, not after. When Farhad's there, mm-hmm. when he emerges from the emerges into the director's area, just thinking just a hoof for Bramley Moore, one of the lessons learned for the club is don't stick the press box right behind the director's box. Not necessarily a wise move, you know. But no, seriously, I think before the game was the problem with me. Not helped by, you know, Adam wrote it yesterday in a very fair piece about what was he doing talking to TalkSport. You know,
yeah.
How are you going to get the fan base on side by that? You know, if you'd come out through official channels, a bit of a rallying call, you know, I'll be there Monday, make sure we get behind the team and all that, you know, type of stuff. Through the club, I'm supporting the manager. Should, you know, slightly different, isn't it? It's a much better way of saying things in terms of getting people behind yourself and the club. Applying to a text room, you know, to what TalkSport doesn't know, it's not necessarily the best way of doing that. To Jim White, sorry, yeah, and. Yeah, I don't think that's helped him in terms of Monday at all. Could have done it far more effectively through official channels with the right message. So I'm more worried before the game than after. I think he may get you know, some selective comments, and you know, hope the mics are turned off in the you know, in the radio part of the press area.
we'll wrap up this.
Yeah, sorry. Supporters are quite entirely to do that as well, by the way. I think it's a voice of opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we'll wrap up our shorter little preview pod today with our usual predictions. Preno, I'll come to you first. Everton v Arsenal, Goodison Park, Monday night. What scores are going to be?
I'm going to be bullish and go for a clean sheet. Everton to win 1-0 with one of those big, you know, sort of loud, noisy nights under the lights. He said once again with his fingers and toes firmly crossed.
Gav, are you similarly optimistic?
I've given up. I've been optimistic for the last 3 weeks, and the thought of just to say it's not worked out well would be an understatement, really, wouldn't it? I think I had a draw in the derby, 1-0 win at Brentford and a draw at City, you know. So keep away from me. I'd settle for a draw on this is another perennial pod favourite. A draw or a win, isn't it? Is a draw a decent result? I'll go for a draw. I'd settle for a draw on, you know, a Tottenham-like draw on Monday. I think that might appease a few people. Yeah, 0-0 for all that.
Personally, I've got no confidence in Everton keeping a clean sheet at the minute. I think I'm still going to go for a draw, but I think 2-2. I think we'll pull a couple of goals out of somewhere, and it might be an exciting little game down at Goodison Park. But that's all we've got time for today. Me and Phil Kirkbride will be at Goodison on Monday, and we'll be back recording our next Royal Blue podcast probably on Tuesday next week, and hopefully we'll have much more of an upbeat mood after what will hopefully be a much more upbeat performance from the Blues on Monday evening. But you've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.